Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with this evening's edition of The Holohoax. You've all been told that Hitler hated the Jews and wanted to exterminate them merely because he was jealous of these saint-like humanitarians. Nothing could be further from the truth. Hitler knew of the parasitic character of the Jew, who even today enjoys $19 billion a year from Americans going into the pockets of Israeli Jews at the rate of $3,800 per year. That's $65 coming out of the pocket of every American, going into the pocket of every Israeli Jew at the rate of $3,800 per year. Hear Adolf Hitler's words to this effect. He said, "Europe will not have peace until the Jewish question has been disposed of. The world has sufficient capacity for settlement, but we must finally break away from the notion that a certain percentage of the Jewish people are intended by our dear God to be the parasitic beneficiary of the body and of the productive work of other peoples. Jewry must adapt itself to respectable, constructive work, as other peoples do, or it will sooner or later succumb to a crisis of unimaginable proportions. If the international finance Jewry, inside and outside Europe, should succeed in plunging the nations into world war yet again, then the outcome will not be the victory of Jewry, but rather the annihilation of the Jewish race. And isn't that true today, as they are plunging us again into World War IV? I hope that the words of Hitler prove to be true, that the Jews will not win, but will be annihilated. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to hear Adolf Hitler himself say in German the words I just recited to you.
Es hat wieder ins Raum genügen. Es muss aber endgültig mit der Meinung gebrochen werden, als sei das jüdische Volk vom lieben Gott eben dazu bestimmt, in einem gewissen Prozentsatz nicht nieder am Körper und an der produktiven Arbeit anderer Völker zu sein. Das Judentum wird sich genau so einer soliden, aufbauenden Tätigkeit anpassen müssen, die es andere Völker auch tun. Oder es wird früher oder später einer Krise von unvorstellbarem Ausmaß erliegen. Wenn es dem internationalen Finanzjudentum in und außerhalb Europas gelingen sollte, die Völker noch einmal in einen Weltkrieg zu stürzen, dann wird das Ergebnis nicht der Sieg des Judentums sein, sondern die Vernichtung der jüdischen Rasse in Europa.
Thank you.
speech to the Reichstag of January 30th, 1939. Let's look at it again. Hitler said, Europe will not have peace until the Jewish question has been disposed of. He said that in 1939. Today, it's true of the entire world. There will not be peace in the world until the Jewish question has been disposed of. And what is the Jewish question? Whether or not the United States of America is going to hand over all of the territory from Egypt to Iraq to the Jews so they can have their long yearned for homeland state, which they say God gave to them, all of the land from Egypt to Iraq, Greater Israel. This is today's Jewish question. Now understand that the Jews get this from their Bible, their Torah, in which they claim God spoke to them, much as God speaks to serial killers today, and promised them that they could have all of this land from the Nile to the Euphrates if they would but kill off all of the men, women, children, and even the animals that belong to the Amalekites. That's how God works for the Jew. He talks to them out loud. They hear these voices. And what does this God say? He says, kill, kill, kill. Kill every man, woman, infant, and suckling child, and even the animals, and I will give you Greater Israel. This is not God, ladies and gentlemen. This is the evil imaginings of a sadistic, psychopathic killer. And we're believing in this God? Not me. I believe that Jesus was right when he said God is love. I don't believe in a God that is the sadistic ramblings of a psychopathic killer. I hope I can convert some of you to my point of view. Hitler certainly understood it. Let's go on with what Hitler says. He says the world has sufficient capacity for settlement. Well, that was true in 39, but it's no longer true. Overpopulation is destroying the settlement capabilities of the world. But at any rate, he said at that time in 39, there was sufficient capacity for settlement. But, he said, in spite of the fact that we have plenty of room, we still, quote, must finally break away from the notion that a certain percentage of the Jewish people are intended by our dear God to be the parasitic beneficiary of the body and of the productive work of other peoples. In other words, we Christians have to break away from the notion that some Jews have been designated by God to live off of us. And that's true. It's true. It was true then, and it's true today. God did not choose the Jew to live off the white man. That is the sadistic ramblings of an insane, religious, psychotic soul who believes God speaks to him in real words and promises him things in exchange for mass murder. Come on, folks. Let's get real. Let's go on with Hitler's speech. He says, Jewry must adapt itself to respectable, constructive work, as other peoples do, or it will sooner or later succumb to a crisis of unimaginable proportions. Well, what is Hitler talking about there? Why has he suggested that the Jews do not adapt themselves to respectable, constructive work, as other peoples do? Because they don't. They're engaged in the slave trade. They smuggle ecstasy and manufacture it. They take children from the Ukraine and other parts of Russia, young girls, ages 15, 14, 13, beautiful blonde girls, kidnap them, take them to Israel, and then sell them out to these disgusting Jewish businessmen for money. This is called the white slave trade, and this is what Jews do for a living. And it's what Jews have been doing for a living since the beginning of time. Remember, these Khazar Jews converted to Judaism in 700 AD in order to get part of the Jew-controlled worldwide slave trade. These guys are bums. They are bums now, and they were bums in 1939. And Hitler says, if they do not adapt themselves to respectable, constructive work, as other peoples do, they will sooner or later succumb to a crisis of unimaginable proportions. Well, the Jews like to tell you they've already succumbed to that crisis when 6 million of them were gassed to death in Hitler's gas chambers in his attempt to annihilate them as a people, which is hogwash. It's communist propaganda. It's entirely untrue. It's the reason I have created this radio program called The Hola Hoax, because it's one big hoax. There were no Jews gassed in the gas chambers because there were no gas chambers. 6 million did not die in the camps. It was closer to 100,000. The Jews themselves have changed the plaque at Auschwitz from 4 million to 1.5 million, and they think that it's going to stop there. No, they did not die of gassing. They died of disease and starvation. Because of the Allies, not because of Hitler. The Allies were carpet bombing them for 2 solid years. They bombed all of the trucks, all of the railroads. The roads were no good, and the foods could not get into the camps. And many, many did not die. If you look at the pictures of the liberations of the camps, some of those women are downright fat. Now, let's go on with the last sentence of Hitler's speech. If the international finance Jewry inside and outside Europe should succeed in plunging the nations into a world war yet again, and they're doing it again, folks. They attacked us in 9/11, no doubt about it in the mind of anybody who's taken the time to research the subject. The Mossad hit us in 9/11 and tried to blame it on the Arabs. Oh, well, they did a good job, didn't they? Our president is going along with it. Our president gave us a list of 19 Arab hijackers, 8 or 9 of whom are alive today, and they've come out of the woodwork and announced that they're alive today. But nobody questions the president. If he says these guys hijacked the Twin Towers, who are we to question it just because they're still alive and didn't die in the hijacking? Duh! Anyway, you see that the Jews are still trying to plunge us into a world war, and Hitler said in 1939 that if they succeed in plunging us in this world war yet again, then the outcome will not be the victory of Jewry, but rather the annihilation of the Jewish race in Europe. And I would say worldwide now that it's about 60 years later. In other words, what Hitler is saying, and he's saying this in faith, is that if the Jews plunge us into yet another world war, eventually they are going to be the loser. And boy, I hope Hitler's right.
He did. He said that in 1939. He prophesied the annihilation of the Jewish race. Now, what is that going to look like? I'll tell you what it's going to look like. What's going to happen to the Jews is that when they continue to annoy the Arabs as they have done, and when more and more people wake up to the fact that it was the Jews who hit us in 9/11 and not the Arabs, and America severs her relationship with the Jews, that will be the very last tie, link between the Jews and any other human beings, in other words, the Americans. They will then stand alone, and 2 billion Arabs will overwhelm this small group of 2 million Jews. At that time, all of the things the Jews said Hitler did to them, which he did not, I'm talking about the Jewish lampshades, the pure Jew fat soap, the sewing up their babies with wires, putting them in gas chambers, killing 6 million of them. None of that happened. Hitler didn't do any of that stuff. But don't you worry, folks, because the Arabs are not like the Germans. They're not sophisticated, civilized people who treat people fairly and justly and with mercy. Not like the Germans at all. They will actually actualize these horrific lies that the Jews told about the Germans and the white race will finally get its revenge without even having to dirty its precious German skirts. In other words, we white people will still maintain our dignity. We will still not sink to the level of these vermins, but if we just stand back and watch, we will see the Arabs do to the Jews all of the things the Jews said the Germans did to them, but the Germans did not. And that, I think, will be divine justice. Girls, ladies, women, have you been accused of being anti-Semitic, a racist, or a hater? Here's the perfect way to get back at your racist, bashing friends. Buy Grandma's Gingerbread Cookie Mix and eat Grandma's Gingerbread Cookies wherever you go. Grandma's Gingerbread Cookies will be sure to curl the whiskers of the dykiest Jewess. Just lift up that cute little Anglo-Saxon chin, point that upturned nose right at your accuser, bob that blonde or brown ponytail up and down a few times, and smile that naughty smile as only a pure white girl can do. Buy Grandma's Gingerbread Cookie Mix and have fun till the school principal takes your bag of Grandma Gingerbread Cookies away. Negro recognition software, fully digitalized for your home viewing pleasure. All Negroes instantly changed to varying degrees of white men, dark, medium, and light, depending on their predisposition for crime. Mexicans are also changed to light-skinned white men, and Jews are completely obliterated. Absolutely no mongrels will be seen by you or your children. Put the NRS chip into your television, video viewer, or computer, and presto, you are instantly transported into a mud-free environment. You need Negro recognition software. Just ask for NRS in your local office supply store or entertainment center.
The most horrible of the Jewish fairy tales surrounding the concentration camps are the stories about Joseph Mengele, known as the Angel of Death, who purportedly committed atrocious experiments on Jewish children when he was the doctor in charge of 400,000 inmates of Auschwitz. We are told that after the First World War, the German people refused to accept the terms of the Versailles Treaty and insisted on working hard. Germans are seen as evil because they're such hard workers. The work ethic of the German is despised by the lazy Jew and is referred to as an evil Germanic trait. This tendency on the part of Germans to work hard caused Berlin, Germany, to overcome the crippling effects of the Versailles Treaty to become the most sophisticated city in the world, outshining even Paris. In this city, Mengele was born of a particularly successful family and, under the tutelage of his Catholic mother, became a very ambitious and successful student, finally becoming appointed as the head physician at Auschwitz. His ambition and tendency to work so very hard is condemned by Jews as sowing the seeds for his future psychosis, which of course never existed. Mengele was not psychotic, and he did not practice horrible, atrocious experiments on anybody. The Jews say that he did perform horrible experiments on Jewish children in order to reveal the secrets of eugenics. What kind of horrible experiments could a person possibly conduct on anybody to reveal the secrets of eugenics? Eugenics is simply the science of breeding, a well-known science to farmers for thousands of years. the only way you can legitimately conduct experiments to promote the science of eugenics would be by breeding, not by cutting up the animals, as the Jews claim Mengele did, and attempting to sew body parts of various different animals together to see if they work. Only Jews could come up with an insane idea like this. It is true that in the heyday of Darwin, eugenics became a legitimate science applicable to human beings, although, of course, the upper classes had always applied the principles of eugenics when it came to breeding their own children. That's why the upper classes in Western Europe, the monarchs, the aristocrats, were able to produce children that never even got cavities in their teeth. They only bred the superior children that were born to them, and then only to superior children of other ruling families. That's what made them upper class. But with Darwin, everything fell into place so that even the lower class person could understand the science of eugenics, and Dr. Mengele was very interested in promoting this science because he wanted to be part of a movement that would help all people weed out the congenital defectives from their racial lines, not just the wealthy. To this end, Dr. Mengele used the most legitimate method for studying eugenics, the method we still use today, which is to study biological identical twins, to monitor their growth from birth, through infancy, through childhood, and through adulthood. These perfectly legitimate studies of the development of twins have been deceitfully represented by Jews as being somehow sadistic in nature, when that there was nothing that could be farther from the truth. The children who were taken out of the camps and taken to the hospital for observation were given candy and treats and exercises and special diets to keep them strong and healthy, because they were suddenly in a hospital environment with doctors and nurses watching over them all the time, and they got special care. Other than that, Mengele did nothing to these twins except measure their growth, just as we do in America today. In order to unlock the secrets of eugenics, you see, if you can study the development of identical twins, you can determine which of the characteristics they develop as they approach and enter adulthood are caused by genetics, and which of those characteristics are caused by environment. The study of identical twins is the very best way of weeding out the effects of nature against the effects of nurture. The Jews point to the high level of sophistication reached by the German people as the very cause of the horrible sadistic practices they falsely claim were perpetrated on them. They hate white people, ladies and gentlemen. They hate excellence. They hate classical music and classical art. And they point to these fine, high-minded exercises as the very reason that Germany committed atrocities against their people, which, of course, the Germans never did. The truth is that sophisticated civilizations do not perpetrate barbaric atrocities. The Germans are not sadistic. Honorable on the battlefield? Yes, indeed. Courageous? Absolutely. 4 times more effective in battle than the lower races. But sadistic? Never. Merciful? Always. This is the characteristic of the superior race. We are a gentle, sophisticated, courageous, selfless people, and these qualities show in our classical music and art. The Jews, so jealous of our ability to create our fine architecture, poetry, literature, and art, point to the products of our excellence, our art, and say, you see, it is this refinement, this greatness of yours that is causing you to be so wicked. You must stop being so hard-working, so diligent, so idealistic, so creative, so disciplined, so willing to subordinate your instincts in order to achieve a higher standard. You must stop it. You must do like we do. You must rut and fuck and suck your way to salvation. Get rid of the shackles of your horrible, disciplined existence and be as we are, completely licentious and without any moral standards whatsoever. Only then will we get rid of barbarous atrocities. But in fact, ladies and gentlemen, nothing could be further from the truth. When you examine the mores of the lower races, the barbarian races, the races who believe that God gives favors in exchange for the sacrifice of humans and animals, you see the true barbaric atrocities. It's the Muslims and the Jews who skin their enemy alive, and the American Indians and the Aztecs and the Mayans who do the human sacrifice, and the Africans who are cannibals. This is where you find the true barbaric atrocities, where they cut off arms and feet and torture one another and do things that the intelligent, sophisticated white man could never conceive of doing. They want you to believe that the opposite is true, that the more high-minded the civilization, the more barbaric the atrocities. The truth is the much more logical fact that the more you discipline yourself, the higher you aspire to make yourself into the glory of God, the more merciful you become. It's so obvious, and yet somehow, with their pseudoscience psychology, they've actually managed to brainwash most of us into believing that hard work and discipline are evil in and of themselves, and we need to free ourselves of our tendency to aspire to make ourselves better people. Mengele is hated by the Jews because he was fascinated with the tall, slender, blue-eyed blonde genotype, whom the Jews refer to as the tall, slender, blue-eyed blonde beast. Jewish professor Michael Barenbaum, in the History Channel's Joseph Mengele, Madman of Auschwitz, refers to the tall, slender, blue-eyed blonde as a beast. Why was Mengele so fascinated with the tall, slender, blue-eyed blonde beast? Well, let me tell you why Mengele was so fascinated with the tall, slender, blue-eyed blonde genotype. It's because that is the original genotype from which our people come, which has been so badly diluted that now only a small percentage of us enjoy our proper physical makeup. Mengele undoubtedly realized that we have all been polluted by race mixing and wanted to help us re-achieve our noble status as blue-eyed, blonde, tall, slender, angelic-looking and thinking creatures. Referred to as the Jew as the tall, slender, blue-eyed, blonde beast.
The secret of propaganda is to simplify complex or complicated things, to make them as simple as possible, as simple that even the less ingenious man can understand what I mean. Simplify. And then, if you had found the form which tells a complicated thing in the simplest way, when you have found this form, then, secondly, repeat it. Repeat it every day. Simplify and repetition. That's the secret of modern propaganda.
Down and gas them good, stole them clothes and shoes, with a big team here and a royal time he's there. Dear kite, dear Jew, everywhere, dead Jew. Oh, mein Führer, bring some hummus just to cook up Jews. Oh, mein Führer, wanted lampshades made of Hebrew skin. We peel it off and hang to dry before we throw them in. With a nipple here and a nipple there, don't you skin with too much hair. Well, my dear, a knitted lampshade made of Hebrew skin. Well, my dear, why did you not cook schwatzers and spits? You let the mongrels get the crazy mix and wops and chinks. With an Achtung here and a Sieg Heil there. Dear Jew, dear Jew, everywhere dead Jew. Well, my dear, a knitted hummus just to cook some Jews.
The other day I took a fishing trip, just me and my boat. An old banjo lip. Banjo was my guide, an old colored fella. He wasn't very dark, he was a high-stepping yeller. So we launched my boat, and I cranked my motor. And up to my nose came a terrible odor. I looked all around, trying to find something dead. But it was Banjo with his arm up, scratching his head. Some niggers never die, they just smell that way. Now the more he'd scratch, the more he'd sweat. And I'm here to say he was a choking me to death. So we loaded up, I just couldn't go on. And I coughed and I gagged all the way home. When I dropped him off, I was next to dying. My nose was a-running, and my eyes were a-crying. The smell scorched the hair right out of my nose. When I got home, I had to burn all my clothes. Some niggers never die, they just smell that way. I recuperated quick, I was thankful for that. I was only in bed for a week and a half. Very first day I was up on my feet, I went to the supermarket down the street. I shopped all around and I filled out my order. My groceries were bagged by a fat nigger porter. The air conditioner was broken, I was ferocious, 'cause it was hot and that nigger was a sweating on my groceries. Some niggers never die, they just smell that way. The vegetables and greens I bought started wilting. My blood pressure rose, and I could have killed him. I was gonna smash him all over that place, but he raised up his arm, and I fell on my face. Now I'm here in the hospital, and at the ceiling I stare. I could have whipped that nigger, except he used germ warfare. So from now on, I'll carry a long, long stick. 'Cause if I can keep from the smell, then I'll have him licked. Some niggers never die, they just smell that way.
Girls, ladies, women, have you been accused of being anti-Semitic, a racist, or a hater? Here's the perfect way to get back at your racist bashing friends. Buy Grandma's Gingerbread Cookie Mix and eat Grandma's Gingerbread Cookies wherever you go. Grandma's Gingerbread Cookies will be sure to curl the whiskers of the dykiest Jewess. Just lift up that cute little Anglo-Saxon chin, point that upturned nose right at your accuser, bob that blonde or brown ponytail up and down a few times, and smile that naughty smile as only a pure white girl can do. Buy Grandma's Gingerbread Cookie Mix and have fun, fun, fun till the school principal takes your bag of Grandma Gingerbread Cookies away. Negro recognition software, fully digitalized for your home viewing pleasure. All Negroes instantly changed to varying degrees of white men, dark, medium, and light, depending on their predisposition for crime. Mexicans are also changed to light-skinned white men, and Jews are completely obliterated. Absolutely no mongrels will be seen by you or your children. Put the NRS chip into your television, video viewer, or computer, and presto, you are instantly transported into a mud-free environment. You need Negro recognition software. Just ask for NRS in your local office supply store or entertainment center. Nobody cares. Nobody cares what the religion of the Jew is, except insofar as it impacts the Jews' inability to be patriotic to America. We know that the Jewish religion teaches the Jew that God gave them all of the land from the Nile to the Euphrates. So as good Americans, we're concerned that some of our citizens are more interested in starting a world war which will benefit Israel by using our military to turn this country over to them, this land from the Nile to the Euphrates. Our Jewish citizens put that interest above the interest of America, and that makes them traitors to America. If you believe that you should subordinate the interests of America's treasury and America's army to some foreign country other than America, you are by definition a traitor to America. And it's this treasonous quality of the Jewish religion that makes the Jewish religion relevant to America. And only this quality. It's the fact that the Jewish religion teaches the Jews that they should subordinate the interests of their host country to creating greater Israel and giving that to the Jew as a present which God ordained they should have at the expense of our treasury and our soldiers, that makes them traitors. It isn't a question of how they worship their God, whether they wear a yarmulke, whether they get to see a rabbi. That is not the issue. The issue is, does this group of people believe, as part of their religion, that God has so ordained that they deserve to have a certain amount of real estate, that America's treasury should be emptied and America's boys and girls should have their blood shed? That is the only item in this religion that's of any concern, and it's of enormous concern because it turns the Jew into a traitor toward his own country, in this case, toward the United States of America. So you see, it isn't that we care about how Jews worship. What we care about is whether or not Jews put America's interests first, and we know darn well they don't. If they were fair and decent people, 2% of them, the Jews comprise 2% of American population is what I'm trying to say, 2% of our number, that number being Jewish, would not be occupying 70% of the positions of influence as their highly touted Jewish professor from Harvard, Alan Dershowitz, brags. He brags that although Jews only comprise 2% of the American population, they hold 70% of the positions of influence and power. Now, that's absolutely impossible without fraud, deceit, nepotism, discrimination, and crime. If they the Jew explains this huge discrepancy between their percentage number within our population to their percentage of power by saying that they are that much more brilliant. And then they go on to say that they can produce out of their numbers per capita 4 times as many gifted people as any other race because they're 4 times brighter. they produce four times more gifted people with IQs of 130 and greater, and therefore they're entitled to many more positions of power than the rest of us. But that doesn't add up. Even if they were telling the truth and they did produce four times more gifted people, they would only have four times more gifted people than their percentage in the population, which would equal 8% of the positions of power. But no, they occupy 70% of the positions of power. So we know that they're not Americans at heart, that they're not fair-minded, that they are discriminating, they are committing fraud and deceit and nepotism. So there's no way that you can see the Jew as anything but a traitor to this country, a parasite, and an enormous problem.
Well, lately niggas are running their mouths, saying they're gonna take over the South. Jigaboo, here's to you, if you can, tried man. Call Dixie Land, we'll never be free to a nigger in the NAACP. Stay away, stay away, stay away from Dixie Land, cause we're proud of our Dixie. Hooray, hooray, we'll fight again, this time we'll win. Demonstrate, shout and sing for Mr. King. But Mr. King isn't gonna lose out when the northern states unite with the south. Watch the fun when it's done, cause they'll run from Dixieland. Cause we're proud of our Dixie. Hooray, hooray, we'll fight again, this time we'll win. We've lived, we'll die in Dixie. Stay away, stay away, you don't belong. Been demonstrating in Louisiana. What a shame, they're to blame, cause they came to Dixieland. Up in the north, big trouble they brewed in Chicago town and Cicero too. Let's unite, Yankee land, come on, fight with Dixieland, cause we're proud of our Dixie. Hooray, hooray, we'll fight again, this time we'll win. We've lived, we'll die in Dixie. Stay away, don't belong in Dixie. Stay away, stay away, you don't belong in Dixie.
The movie I'm reviewing today is called Crazy in Alabama. This movie, of course, supports the thesis that it's wrong to separate the races. But even though it tells us a lie, the mere addressing of the subject reveals the truth, which is that white people are not allowed to separate themselves from blacks in spite of the many hardships that white people endure when they integrate with blacks. Most notably, they have to smell the odor of their bodies, which is so much stronger than the body odor of whites. Secondly, don't ever forget that when a white marries a black, because of the recessive nature of the white genes, the genetic probability of producing a white child is only 1 in 8, whereas the genetic probability of producing a Negro child in a union between a white and a black person is 3 in 8, and the genetic probability of producing a brown child out of this union is 4 in 8, or 50%. In other words, if a white marries a black, they have a 50% likelihood of having a brown child. The likelihood of producing a black child is 3 in 8, and the likelihood of producing a white child is 1 in 8. So it is genocide to enforce mongrelization of the races.
Our ancestors knew this instinctively, but now we can quote science and prove it scientifically. Nevertheless, we're not allowed to discuss these subjects, and we must submit to enforced integration, even though it will most certainly result in the end of our race. This movie, Crazy in Alabama, shows a group of aggressive black youths approaching a white swimming pool and demanding entrance. Of course, the white police officers don't allow them entry because they know that the swimming pool is now going to stench of Negroes. And this is just a scientific fact. I'm not saying this because I hate Negroes. I'm saying it because it's true. We have a picture of approximately 20 juvenile blacks demanding the right to swim in the white people's swimming pool. The blacks, from the looks of them, are ready for some violence. And again, don't forget the predisposition of the black man is so much greater than the white man toward violence. In spite of the fact that only 13% of our population is comprised of blacks, they commit 51% of the violent crime. So here we have a picture in Crazy in Alabama of approximately 20 black youths demanding the right to go swimming in the white swimming pool. And what happens? The white police officers resist. One of the blacks gets killed. And, of course, the police officer is severely punished. And, according to this movie, right prevails and the white race is exterminated. The father of the killed black youth is depicted as a loving, wise, ethical Negro man. And the white police officer who refuses to allow the black violent youth entry into the white swimming pool is depicted, as always, as a vicious sadist. The flaw of the movie occurs when the white police officer confronts the 20 black youths and says, "You can't come into the swimming pool," and the black man says, "We have a right." This is where America has gone wrong. According to our Supreme Court, the black youth is right. He does have a right to swim in a white swimming pool. And he proves his point by taking his 20 black youths running into the swimming pool across the line of police officers and jumping into the swimming pool, fouling up the water for the white people so that, of course, they aren't going to be able to go swimming in there until all the water is taken out and the swimming pool is scrubbed down. And then new water will have to be put in the swimming pool. But that's okay, because, after all, white people are evil in that they can tell the difference in the smell of the Negro and the white man. That's what makes the white man evil. He knows the difference. This movie is a perfect example of the brainwashing we've been hearing since World War II, when Hitler was wrongfully portrayed as being a megalomaniacal, multi-mass-murdering sadist, homosexual, emotional and mental freak, which he was not. If you want to see who Hitler was, take a look at his artwork at www.hitler.org, or look at my website, www.monamontgomery.com, and your own eyes will show you exactly the personality that Hitler had: a pleasant, well-balanced, happy, optimistic and idealistic man. But he's portrayed, just as police officer is in Crazy in Alabama, as mean, sadistic, murderer, and he's none of these things. A typical piece of Jewish propaganda, Crazy in Alabama. The movie is seen through the eyes of a 13-year-old beautiful white boy who is, of course, the perfect Wigger. He is loved by the audience because he lies to this sadistic white sheriff in order to protect his sister who has killed her husband. So we see immediately that authority is despised and that love for the out-of-control killer is a heroic position. This young man, after heroically lying to the white sheriff in order to protect his murderous sister, then goes swimming at the local swimming pool, and we see him going down underneath the swimming pool bottom with his breath held, and we see all the white children swimming underwater, and then suddenly, like a bunch of little goldfish, they all disappear and leave the pool because they are so repulsed by the presence of a Negro in the swimming pool. And we see this Negro with his arms outstretched in a supplicating attitude, as if he were praying to God while standing in the swimming pool, offending all of the white children.
Have you ever been just driving around and ended up in the colored part of town? And you see an old-time one-room shack with a great big TV antenna. Then you look out in the back, you can always see a Cadillac. And inside there's about 15 niggers eating one can of beans for dinner. Now ain't that just like a nigger, so the story goes. They just like to live that way, you know. Why, they haven't got one spark of ambition in their mind. They're hard-headed as a dad-blamed mule, and the only reason they go to school is so they can learn to sign their names when they become members of the welfare line. They're looking for a handout, give something free. Looking for a handout from you and me. And with the consent of the president, they're gonna get their way. They're gonna get their way. Now I ain't aiming to run anybody down, but I know how they operate down in Coontown. Why, they wouldn't hit a lick at a snake if it was curling up to strike. But when their leader says, "Hey, nigga, demonstrate," why, them jigaboos don't even hesitate. Cause as a nigger says, them's the kind of happening we like. They're looking for a handout, yeah, something free. Looking for a handout from you and me. And with the consent of the president, they're gonna get their way. They're gonna get their way. But one day there's gonna be a stop to all this giving, and darkies, you're gonna have to account for your living. You won't be able to hold your black hand out and wait for somebody to give you your daily bread. Cause the master said you'll have to earn your salvation, so you'd better start looking over the situation and stop causing all this trouble and be a good old nigger instead. And quit looking for a handout, yeah, something free. Quit looking for a handout from Uncle Sam and me. Don't try to integrate, be glad to segregate. It's better that way, much better that way. It's better that way.
Gee, how God loves his chosen people. He always tells them what to do. Steal over 80% of the water from Palestine. and I'll make the desert to bloom for you. Gosh, how God loves his special darlings. He always whispers to the Jew, steal the Golan Heights from Syria, but be sure to sink the USS Liberty too. My, 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 how God loves his chosen people. He always tells them what to do. Drop the Twin Towers and the White House and the Pentagon, and America will turn the Middle East over to you.
Federal aid, federal aid, we hear it all the time. But it's not really federal aid, 'cause the money is yours and mine. The money is yours and mine. I read in the papers in real big print about a sugar-coated speech made by our president. With federal aid, he thinks he'll win our trust. But federal aid, hell, the money belongs to us. He puts taxes on this, taxes on that, just any kind of tax to keep the government fat. He says he's gonna give us federal aid or bust. But federal aid, hell, the money belongs to us. Federal aid, federal aid, we hear it all the time. But it's not really federal aid, 'cause the money is yours and mine. The money is yours and mine. He started a new program, the anti-poverty school. I think it's a good idea, nobody wants to be a fool. Now he says he's running short of funds, and that ain't no joke. But it ain't the government that's hurting, it's us that's going broke. Now if we could just keep most of the money we've made, there wouldn't be much reason to have federal aid. Now I believe in helping the poor, I think it's a must. But it's not federal aid, hell, the money belongs to us. Federal aid, federal aid, we hear it all the time. But it's not really federal aid, 'cause the money is yours and mine. The money is yours and mine. Now, why should the president take all the credit?
You niggers, listen now, I'm gonna tell you how to keep from getting tortured when the Klan is on the prowl. Stay at home at night and lock your doors up tight. Don't go outside or else you'll find those crosses are burning bright. Now I know you won't believe me, so I'm gonna tell you why. The Cajun Ku Klux Klan is gonna get you by and by. I'm warning you that when I'm through, you're gonna change your tune. This story's about a nigger, his name was Levi Coon. He walked into a cafe, he thought he'd get a bite. He thought that they would serve him since they passed the civil rights. The waitress told him no, and that he'd better go. He said, no ma'am, my Uncle Sam say I don't have to go. So he sat there in that cafe, being stubborn as a mule. No matter what she said, he wouldn't get up off that stool. He sat there like a jackass that I'm gonna demonstrate. I came in here to eat, and I ain't leaving till I've ate. The waitress had enough. She said, I'll call your bluff. She said, if we can't treat you right, we'll have to beat you up. The phone was in her hands. She gave him one more chance. He wouldn't go, and so she called the Cajun Ku Klux Klan. When he saw them Cajuns coming, Levi knew it was too late. His eye popped out his head, and his kinky hair got straight. He said, oh, lousy white folks, I didn't mean a thing. Why did I have to listen to that demonstrator king? Now niggers understand, they tied up both his hands. He was at the mercy of the Cajun Ku Klux Klan. I knew just what they'd do, Levi knew it too. I knew what kind of torture they would put that nigger through. Now the moral of this story, as plain as it can be, niggers, mind your business and let us white folks be. You'd better heed my warning and try to understand. Don't you demonstrate around the Cajun Ku Klux Klan.
Dude, what the hell is that noise?
Oh, that's just a nigger. We've got a nigger problem around here.
So what are you going to do about it?
Haven't you ever heard of ethnic cleansing?
Well, yeah, but...
Look, I just happen to have my Acme nigger-seeking missile.
Hey, what is that?
Just aim it at a herd of niggers.
Hey, what are you doing?
Then fire the missile.
What up, dog? You know what I'm saying? This be some whack shit. We'll be that coming in the woods today.
Then presto, nigger soup.
At resistance.com, we can't sell you a nigger seeking missile, but we do sell ethnic cleansing, the video game.
Ethnic cleansing, go all, only from resistance.com, the soundtrack of the white revolution.
Well, that's it for tonight, folks. I hope you enjoyed this evening's edition of the Holohoax. Tune in again next week, same time, same station. And don't forget, we in America still have freedom of speech. That puts a special burden on us to speak up against the Jew. In 7 white Christian countries, it's against the law to speak up the Jew as I have done tonight. And I would go to jail for 5 years in Germany, Austria, England, France, Australia, and Sweden and Switzerland. Let's not let it happen here in America. The only way we're going to save our freedom of speech, ladies and gentlemen, is to use it. If you don't use it, you will lose it. So please, get in touch with Alex DeCivita at rahoa.org, also known as thewhiteplanet.org. Ask him if you can spend $10 of your money for an hour of his time to broadcast your thoughts and ideas. Speak up loudly, ladies and gentlemen. Even if you're young and still in your teens, your brain is at its most efficient at the age of 16. So don't believe what you hear. Listen to what you hear, but believe what you see and speak about what you see. That's the only way we're going to stay alive as a race and preserve the vision of our founding fathers here in the United States of America.